This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, second hour here on The Edge. We have a lot to get to. It is Thursday, end of the hour. Of course, Jeff Motley is going to join us. We are well into the NASCAR playoffs and our first elimination race coming up. We've got three drivers locked into the round of 12. Other 13 drivers, well, they're fighting for a spot this weekend. So we'll talk about that with Jeff coming up at the bottom of the hour. But let's get to the National Football League, a little golf as well, whatever he wants to do, because he is now the captain since he's on the show. Matt Youmans with us, host of My Guys in the Desert, Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 Eastern. Youmans, what's up, man?
Well, I've been watching golf. I've been up since about 4 o'clock this morning watching golf, and Tiger got off to a little bit of a slow start today. Jordan Spieth at one point was 3 over, I think, after like 3 or 4 holes.
I thought it was like the first hole.
I got back to even par. Then what's that?
I thought it was like the first hole. He tees off, and then like the coverage goes away for a second, and then like 2 minutes later, they show him. He's on the cart with his club. He's like, I can't find the ball. I got to tee off again.
That was the second hole.
Oh, okay.
He actually hit his first drive right down the middle, which I've done that a lot of times on the first tee. Just hit it right down the middle.
You
think it's going to be a great day, and an hour later, you look at your scorecard and say, "What just happened?" But Jordan Spieth, I think, ended the day at 3 over. Tiger was 1 over. JVT, I wasn't quite buying all the hype about how tough this course is going to be, the winner was going to be over par. Last night, William Hill had the winning score at 281.5. This is a par 70 course.
Yeah.
And Westgate had 280.5, and the hitter was plus 190. I went ahead and played that. I thought the winner was going to be at even par or better in this tournament. These players are just too good. And if you looked at the weather forecast, there was no wind, no rain. So if weather is not going to be an issue, I thought these guys were going to shoot better scores than expected. And I think that's what we've seen so far. And we also saw the hole-in-one prop hit this morning. Patrick Reed, Fat Pat, knocked him in.
That's right.
To hit the S on the hole-in-one prop.
Good for Fat Pat. I know you cheered very loudly when he did that, right?
Oh, yeah. I was celebrating like a wild man. You wouldn't believe it. Yeah. When good things happen to good people.
Yeah. That's right. Hey, before we move on from golf, really quickly, I was making the case. So Tiger, 3 over for the day. The way he golfs, humans, like, there's no way he's climbing his way back into contention, right? Like, you can't scramble and miss fairways on a course like this.
You know what? Did he finish 1 over or 3 over?
Let me pull that up. Excuse me. I might have been looking at the wrong one, because you were right that his score might have been a little bit. I'll get the result. Regardless, though, what do you think? Go ahead.
Yeah, the last I checked, Tiger was he was 1 over, I think, going to the 17th hole. So unless he blew up at the very end, I thought he was 1 over for the day. I'll double check that. But here's the thing. I don't think he was playing that well today, to get to your point, as he was scrambling quite a bit. And, but that's Tiger's game. He's always been a great scrambler. And he hit a 20-foot birdie putt. He just wasn't finding fairways and wasn't very consistent today. So I was not, impressed by the way he was playing, even though his scoring was okay. I thought, the more I watched him, that he was going to struggle in this tournament. You are correct. So
yeah,
he finished with a 73. So Spieth and Tiger each a 73 and 3 over, tied for 89th at this point, with a lot of guys still obviously on the course. And I saw Tiger, I thought, a 1 over going to the 17th hole. So, I bet, we talked about this on the show yesterday, Tim Murray and I both bet Tiger Woods to miss the cut at plus 155. We thought it was going to be kind of a coin flip, right? I thought it should have been a pick'em line, essentially, for Tiger to make a cut. Wes Reynolds told me he thought Tiger would make the cut right on the number. Wes is rarely wrong. So I'm not that surprised by, I guess, a 3 over, just because, like you said, he was scrambling so much today. And it's hard to make a living that way. It's like you say, two things don't last: dogs who chase cars and pros who putt for par. And when you're scrambling and trying to knock down, 10-foot par putts all day, eventually those are not going to drop, and you're not going to make the cut. But Tiger was not playing great. And it's funny what you said about Jordan Spieth on the second hole. He hits a drive out of bounds, and he's in the cart out there trying to find his ball. And he thought Spieth might just completely unravel at that point. But give him credit, because he didn't, and he finished the day at 3 over. But I actually bet both of those guys to miss the cut, so hopefully that happens. And Justin Thomas, who I do have a small bet on, is in the lead. And then a couple of long shots I played. One at the advice of Indy Jeff Seeley was Brendan Todd. He's up there close to the top of the leaderboard. So a long way to go, man. But this course is obviously not playing as tough as all the experts and a lot of the players predicted.
Yep, Justin Thomas with a winged foot record in the U.S. Open with his first round, 5-under for the day, and the sole leader right now. All right, by the way, really quickly, last note on golf, and because you and I in our days on the edge would make fun of Jordan Spieth a lot. The best part, not only watching him right around that golf court, I don't know if it was the first hole or the second hole, humans, where on his approach shot, he hit a ridge, but it was on the wrong side and it rolled backward. He's like, oh, Michael, I needed to put it 2 yards to the right. Like, you could hear him just complaining to his caddy. Like, it's really fun to watch him, although you don't want to laugh at people's struggles. All right, let's go to the National Football League. What's on your mind for week two? I've kind of found myself in a spot, humans, where I'm trying spots to buy low, right? Like, so I took the Eagles +1 against the Rams. I laid 6.5 with the 49ers over the Jets. I'm trying to buy low on certain teams. Do you think that's the right angle here for week two?
Yeah, I had a lot of the wrong angles in week one. I think I went like 2-5 or something the game I played on in week one. I made the mistake in the Browns. The Vikings, that was a dumb decision. I didn't think the Vikings would be that bad. Now everybody loves the Vikings this week against the Colts, apparently. So
I was on the Lions. I like the Colts this week. Another buy low spot, but continue.
That's one of the sharp plays of the week, by the way, is the Vikings. Sharps love the Vikings this week. I didn't see much to love in that performance last week against the Packers. But at the same time, how bad were the Colts? I mean, you can't even force Gardner Minshew to throw an incompletion. That's a game I'll probably stay away from. I lean Colts in that game, but I'll probably stay away from that. I did bet the Eagles, and the Eagles are 1.5-point dogs early at the Westgate on Monday. And right now I pick them, and the guys at the Superbook think that's going to go to Eagles -1 at some point. You can still bet the Eagles, actually. A couple spots out there, you get the Eagles at +1. Bet MGM, DraftKings being a couple of them. You can play the Eagles at pick. And I like this. It's not all negative news. You know, the Eagles blew a 17-0 lead at Washington. Carson Wentz unraveled. Doug Peterson threw on another clumsy coaching clinic. Wentz tossed 2 picks. One that really turned the game around with about 6 minutes to go in the second quarter. I don't even know why he was throwing deep downfield at that point when the Washington offense couldn't pick up a first down of 17 points. But Wentz also sacked 8 times, the running attack, 3.4 yards per carry. So it was not a lot positive after that 17-0 lead. But there's going to be some help on the way this week. Right tackle Lane Johnson, running back Miles Sanders going to be back. The Eagles' offensive line has been beat up a little bit. So it's going to help to get Lane Johnson back. Really, if you look at Philly, impressive array of offensive weapons when healthy. And I see far better weapons than what the Rams have offensively. And Wentz is a better quarterback in this matchup against Jared Goff, despite what it looked like in week one. I thought Sean McVay did a great job. This was one of the games we got right last week. Almost got it wrong, if not for that offensive pass interference call. But Sean McVay is now 4-0 straight up in ATS and openers, and he's got extra prep time. I knew he was going to script a pretty good game plan, and if you watch that, he really controlled the first half. I thought he outcoached Mike McCarthy from start to finish in that game, and McVay's got the ability to kind of mask the flaws in the Goff-led offense. All that said, Dallas was still in position to win the game down the stretch, if not for that coaching blunder by McCarthy. He decides not to kick a game-tying field goal, and that PI flag. Cowboys could have easily escaped with a win in that game. I just think, bottom line here, this is a bounce-back spot for the Eagles. They had 3 turnovers, forced none at Washington, and I think Wentz will play a lot better this week than he did last week, and the fact they're getting Lane Johnson and Miles Sanders back, I think the Rams might be a little bit overrated by some people off that victory over Cowboys. So give me the Eagles at Pick'em.
All right, let me ask your opinion on a couple of other games. How about New York and Chicago? So I bet on the Giants on Monday night. Ultimately, they don't get there. But humans, like, I feel like when I have a team who had a possession at the one-yard line, who had multiple drives of over 80-plus yards, but kept shooting themselves in the foot, they only lost by 10. I felt like I should have gotten the cover there. Ultimately, they don't. But if you look at Chicago, look, Detroit in that fourth quarter, not only did they blow it, they were down three corners. Jeff Okuda in the game didn't even start the game. He didn't play. They lost two corners throughout the course of the game, and all of a sudden, as you lose bodies, you lose the lead, you ultimately lose the contest. I think here the Giants showed me enough at times offensively and especially defensively that I'll trust them a little bit in a spot against the Bears. I'm just wondering where this number is going to go, because 5.5 isn't anything special, and I wonder where the market's going to put this. But what do you make of Bears and Giants?
Yeah, I would say I'm on the same page with you here. If you can find a six, if that pops up at some point here, play the Giants. I think that's right side in this game. Bears completely stole that win at Detroit. It was ridiculous. We don't have to go over what happened. Everybody knows what happens by now. But Mitchell Trubisky, I watched him first three quarters. He still exhibited little ability to throw with accuracy from the pocket. He just can't do it. When he gets out and runs outside the pocket, he can make plays. He can actually make accurate throws, but he can't throw from in the pocket. I think one thing that a lot of people overlooked in that game, too, the Bears' defense was not very good. Allowed 426 total yards, most of that in the first three quarters. Now, Daniel Jones, there was some bad with his performance Monday night, but I thought a lot more good. He passed for 279 yards, two touchdowns, ran for 22 yards. He directed that 19-play drive where he got hit, deflected, and picked off. And a lot of people were criticizing Daniel Jones for that. Hey, this Pittsburgh defense might be the best defense in the league, okay? And he ran a 19-play drive down to the goal line against that defense. I think he's going to find an easier time of it this week against the Bears. Saquon Barkley had six receptions for 60 yards. Yeah, he only had 6 yards rushing on 15 carries. He's going to find more running room this weekend. I was not impressed by the Bears' defense last week. The Giants have covered 4 of their last 5 as road dogs. Bears were on a 4-13 ATS skid before that grand larceny in Detroit last week. Now the Bears flip to the favorites role. I like the Giants here as dangerous dogs. I think they got a great shot to win the game, and I'm looking to bet the Giants.
What do you make of the Washington football team? That dynamic front seven now gets a mobile quarterback here in Kyler Murray. And what I find interesting about this, humans, you know, 6.5 right now, total 46.5. Murray actually wasn't that great as a passer against San Francisco, but the reason why he's such a pain in the ass for the 49ers is his mobility against that front seven. Now he gets another one coming to town here. I think the number's probably a little inflated given what they did last week. But I don't know what to do with this game. Did you have anything on Cardinals football team?
I did not play this game, but if I did, I think it would have to lean towards taking 7 with football team. You know, if you look at Kyler Murray, and I've watched that Cardinals 49ers games 3 times. I have recorded the one. And he's like a video game quarterback. He can cut on a dime. He's got incredible speed. And like you said, he's tough for bigger defensive linemen to handle. How many times did you see the defensive end to have him like dead in their sights, and boom, he's gone just like that. And Murray's going to give a lot of defenses trouble because he's so quick and mobile. And I think it's a tough spot to lay the points with the Cardinals because they're coming off a big win, and they're facing a really good defense that wants to keep the score down. I think what Ron Rivera is trying to do is just let his defense control games. Dwayne Haskins not make many plays in the passing game. If Washington can run the ball, then they should be in a position to win some games in the fourth quarter. I think that's Rivera's plan, to play ugly, low-scoring type games. I don't know if the formula is going to work against Kyler Murray and the Cardinals, but that game is probably going to be a pass for me.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this last one. Sunday Night Football, Seattle 4, total of 45. This is going to get to 3.5, right? Like, I like New England in this spot, and grabbing 4 is the way to go because it's not going to go to 4.5, correct?
No, it was a 3.5 for a while. Yep. I think it's going to sit at 4. This is a really interesting game, too, because how much belief do you have in what you saw from the Patriots in Week 1? Can Cam Newton run the ball like he did against the Dolphins? Can he do that against the Seahawks defense? I'm not so sure. He's going to have to make some plays in the passing game. I think Pete Carroll's going to have a much better game plan here for for Cam Newton after seeing the Patriots offense for a week. And Cam, let's face it, his wide receiver corps is banged up right now, and he doesn't have a lot of playmakers there. So I think that would be my primary concern if I were going to bet the Patriots, is that the Seahawks now have some tape of this Patriots offense. They're going to have a chance to see what Josh McDaniels' plan is. And I think they're going to do a pretty good. I don't think the Patriots are going to put up many points in this game. Mm-hmm. I'd be really surprised if they do. But Russell Wilson is red hot, just like he was to start last season. So I actually kind of lean to the Seattle side, even though I hate to do that, because if you look at the trends, points to Belichick in the underdog role in this spot. So I haven't played this one yet. I'm thinking about it. Monday night, JVT, I did play the Las Vegas Raiders plus six over the Saints. We're going to be without Michael Thomas. And Drew Brees just was not pushing the ball down the field as much as people love to talk about Tom Brady.
Yep.
And what he didn't do last week. Drew Brees didn't do much either. I think the Raiders can put a serious scare into the Saints on Monday night. So I took the plus six.
My takeaway from that game was, holy crap, both these guys look really old. That Saints-Bucks game was not the best played at the quarterback position. All right, man. Hey, we're up against it. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, you bet. Thanks.
You got it. Again, Matt Youmans at Matt Youmans 24/7. And, of course, host of My Guys in the Desert, Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. When we come back, we'll update the leaderboard, tell you what's going on. Just Dustin Johnson just missed a putt for par, so we'll tell you where he's at on the leaderboard, and we'll get to the college football game of the weekend. Navy and Tulane? Probably not, but it seems like it's a good game. Tight spread. We'll talk about that. And remember, it is Thursday, NASCAR week. We'll talk about that with Jeff Motley coming back. This is your last chance to subscribe to VSiN before our rates increase. Get the Pro Football Betting Guide with over 100 pages of NFL betting analysis, the College Football Betting Guide with insights on every team. Analysis versus insights. Which would you rather have? I think you can have both if you check this out. Daily emails, including our experts' best bets on every sport, 24/7 video streams, weekly betting analysis for every NFL game, Point Spread Weekly, our digital betting magazine. Sign up now. Next week, the prices will be higher. Visit vsin.com/subscribe today to lock in your subscription, including our football betting guides at the best prices of the year. It's vsin.com/subscribe. Just don't tell anybody, because these prices, they're like stealing. Might get in trouble. Look at that, huh? That was good. I even got a from the crew on the right. That was good. When anybody exhales hair or exhales air, I can't talk today. It's out today, man. My speech is done for the day. Let's go to college football. Actually, no, really quickly, before we get to college, I will update what I was talking about before we went out. That would be golf. Just to tell you that Justin Thomas, still your leader right now through the first round, 5 under. Patrick Reed, as humans loves to call him Fat Pat, 4 under, second all by himself. Shane Norris, Rory Sabatini have moved in to a tie for third with Rory McIlroy. McIlroy's done for the day. He's in the clubhouse, but Sabatini and Norris both through 9. So they're still on the course making their way up the leaderboard. I also mentioned Dustin Johnson and the putt that he missed for par. Well, he is 2 over for the day right now. Not going well early. He is through 4. But DJ with a, I think it's a double bogey right there on 4. Yes, indeed. A double bogey on 4. So it's not going well for him. And his running mate today, Bryson DeChambeau, through 4 as well. Still just that birdie on 1 and nothing else as he tries to power swing his way through winged foot. All right, now we can get to college football. I am intrigued by Navy and Tulane. I think it's going to be an interesting game, obviously because we get Navy, who's coming off of just a shellacking at the hands of BYU. You get Tulane, who had to come screaming back against South Alabama and ultimately win that game with the last 21 points scored. So now Green Wave, 7-point favorite with a total of 48. When you look at what Tulane did in their performance against South Alabama as well, right, down 24-6, well into the third quarter, then those 21 unanswered to win 27-24 as an 11.5-point favorite, I think really when you looked at what they did against the Jags, it's about putting themselves in that hole as opposed to South Alabama putting them there, right? For example, fumble at the South Alabama 49-yard line on their first drive. The next drive, they couldn't convert a fourth down. First touchdown by South Alabama, they actually had them at a third and 14 on their own 16-yard line, but then Tulane gave up a 23-yard completion to give them the first down. Next play, they actually forced a fumble but didn't recover it, right? So there's like all these little things for Tulane where ultimately they were playing pretty well, but you either can't finish drives, you turn things over, or you give up big plays on third down, and you got to improve those sort of things, right? You would think you'd correct those going into your next matchup against Navy. And offensively, the one thing they really have to correct is Tulane was terrible on third downs, 1 of 11. That's got to get better. Now, you say it's got to get better. Well, you take a Navy team that is essentially at the bottom of the barrel, right? Like they're at their lowest point right now. You look at what they did against BYU, nothing either side of the ball, right? To rehash some of the numbers, 301 yards allowed on 49 carries at 6.1 yards per attempt. If you look at through the air, Zach Wilson, Baylor Romney combined to go 16 to 22, 279, 12.7 yards per attempt. It was not good at all for what Navy brought to the table defensively. And on the other side, offensively, 149 total yards, 119 on the ground, 3.1 yards per carry, and the mistakes, right? We talk about self-inflicted wounds, 6 penalties, 54 yards. So is Navy going to be able to fix whatever was going on with them last week? And you look at Tulane, right? Because there's some really big positives, I think, coming out of that matchup. For example, right? They limited South Alabama to 65 yards on 35 carries, just 1.9 yard per attempt. They were not good defensively on third downs on 8 of 17, and their pass defense was shoddy, 321, 8.7 yards per attempt. You're taking on a Navy team that threw the ball 8 times, right? And they're not going to challenge you downfield, although reports are that they wanted to throw it a little bit more. For them, apparently throwing it a little bit more was, right, 8 pass attempts against BYU. So for the most part, if Tulane can maintain their solid rush defense that they brought to the table against South Alabama, you would think that this works in their favor. My worry here with a matchup like this is with the perception of Navy, what happened in that first game, Tulane coming back, is 7 the right number here? Like, is 7 maybe too high against Navy because they are at rock bottom? It's a game that ultimately I scratched off, but I want to see how Navy is going to perform in this game and watch this going forward, because this could be the start of Navy if they fall flat on their face here against Tulane. Their power rating probably getting at an all-time low for them this season. Should also note, too, at least recency, Navy 4-1 straight up, 5-1 straight up in their last 6 games against Tulane. So it is a series that has gone Navy's way in recent history. Also, you get a key number of 7 if you wanted to take it with the midshipmen buying them low. But a little weird that Tulane, a 7-point favorite now over Navy, is an 11.5-point favorite over South Alabama and couldn't get it done against the South Alabama Jaguars. All right, NFL Week 2, we continue our analysis when we come back. The Buffalo Bills taking on the Miami Dolphins, originally a 3-point favorite, now 5.5. But could they be down their top 3 linebackers? That doesn't sound good. Talk about that next. Hey, make sure you're ready for the action. The action. Whatever action it is. Sign up for FirstBet, a new betting and handicapping product from ExpressBet. Use the promo code Vegas500. Get a $10 free bet as soon as you sign up. Plus, receive up to a $500 bonus for wagering in your first 30 days. Visit first.com/bet for more information. 1st.com/BET. Again, first.com/bet. Promo code Vegas500. All right. We have another addition, by the way, at 3 under, along with McElroy, who is in the clubhouse. Joaquin Niemann through 6 is now 3 under for the day. So Newman's spot on with the analysis there that this course, and we had talked about it, right? Like all of the other plays in terms of the U.S. Open and what was happening in terms of the scores in the years past here for the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. A lot of scores that were over par, but sure enough, here we are. These golfers are a lot better. Your leader at 5 under, Justin Thomas, then a whole bunch of guys at 3 and 2 under par. Among them, John Rahm and Ricky Fowler. So they're moving their way up through 3 both of them. Okay, National Football League. Let's talk a little bit about this. Buffalo, Miami. So Buffalo is now up to a 6-point favorite here at the South Point Hotel and Casino. Total of 41. The Bills are quietly a little banged up here. This is worth pointing out because their top two linebackers, Tremaine Edmonds, Matt Milano, both dealing with injury, shoulder and hamstring respectively, they could be out. Right, we always talk about the whole limited status in practice, right? And if you're limited in practice, it's a good indicator of whether or not you're going to be available. Well, both of these guys were not limited in practice the other day. They didn't participate in practice. And here's the worst part about it. Delshon Phillips, their backup linebacker, undisclosed injury. At least I couldn't find what exactly was wrong with him. Well, guess what? He didn't participate in practice either. So you could be down your top three linebackers against the Miami Dolphins here. Dolphins don't have much. Key players like Devontae Parker, Byron Jones, Xavier Howard, all on the injury report, but all limited participants in practice. Obviously a very big positive for them and their availability coming up this weekend. Here's the thing, though. There's two things. One, obviously the market, very high in the Buffalo Bills. I went against them in week one. Ultimately, I trusted Adam Gase of the New York Jets, and I got laughed at, and I was going to say an S-word here. They just crapped all over the New York Jets. It was not very good. I would think, though, just from a numbers perspective, that the Bills are a little overvalued by the market. But here's the thing. So I was rewatching this Patriots and Dolphins game from week one. One of the things that is, like, I think gone under the radar from the first week, we talked about this in the offseason. If you're the Miami Dolphins, can you trust Ryan Fitzpatrick to put together consecutive seasons of, like, plus quarterback play? And I'm not talking about, like, you know, 30 touchdowns, 10 picks. We're asking for like 25 and 15, Ryan. Like, just kind of guide us through the season. 25 and 15 would be a perfectly fine year for what we're expecting. But I thought quietly Ryan Fitzpatrick in game one against the New England Patriots was garbage. Like, just flat out not good with what he did against New England. 20 of 30, 191, three interceptions, a key interception late that kept you outside of the number, just 6.4 yards per attempt. And now you get an even better secondary, at least in terms of talent and what they have right now, because, you know, the Patriots are very good and they have guys like Gilmore. The Bills are loaded with talent as well in their secondary. So now you have to do this again if you're Ryan Fitzpatrick, who played a hot garbage game, had another interception that was dropped as well. Like, I did not like what I saw from the Miami Dolphins offense whatsoever. And so now we get to take on the Buffalo Bills. Now, here's the thing. The Bills, even at full strength, the one thing that they are subpar against, that would be a rushing attack. The Dolphins against the Patriots, 27 attempts, 87 yards, 3.2 in terms of yards per carry. Like, this was just not a good offensive performance from the Miami Dolphins whatsoever. And their quarterback was a big part of holding them back. So while I do believe Buffalo is a little overvalued by the market, I don't necessarily feel comfortable taking six with the Miami Dolphins because I really don't trust Ryan Fitzpatrick, especially after that first game. I don't think he looked very good, and the offense really suffered from it. And as a whole, as an offense against the New England Patriots, you go out there, you average 4.6 yards per play to 5.7 against that conservative offense that was the New England Patriots. And that's the other part of this, right? Is that the Patriots came out with a vanilla offense, designed runs for Cam Newton, not really airing it out too much, 357 total yards, 5.7 yards per play. And so what does this defense look like for the Miami Dolphins as well? So overall, yes, I think going forward, the Bills will probably be a little overvalued. And look, this might work out for this hypothesis, right? If they go out, win this game and cover, then you'll get some really good spots to play against Buffalo in the future, considering a 2-0 start and two consecutive covers as well. But right now, to me, this game, it's about Ryan Fitzpatrick, because I'm not sure if we're going to get another consecutive year here of, like, decent Fitzpatrick, right? This looked like, at least in game one, like a Ryan Fitzpatrick who, you know, had lost his job with the New York Jets, had eventually got benched after a hot start for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Like, this is what it started to look like, and this is what we talked about in the offseason, the consecutive seasons of Fitzpatrick, and were you going to get Fitzmagic once again? So ultimately, going to stay away from that, but driving the market up to six right now on the Buffalo Bills, total 41. There are plenty of five and a halfs out there. So if you want to go out there and lay 5.5 still, you are perfectly capable of doing that. Worth noting as well, when I talk about the market driving this number up, this originally was Bills minus 3. Drove it up to 3.5. Games got played, ultimately opened up at 4, and the market drove it up to 5.5, 6. Let's go to Minnesota at Indianapolis. So I mentioned this to humans, and I should be specific here. I like Indianapolis in this game. I like Indianapolis under 3, though. Like, if I have to lay 3, I'm not in. If I get to lay 2.5, if it ultimately gets there, I'll be down with that. But let's talk about the Indianapolis side of things first, because there's this pushback, right, that Phillip Rivers wasn't that bad. And, like, there is some truth to that, right? Philip Rivers and the offense were very solid. They did not punt against the Jacksonville Jaguars. In terms of their efficiency of their offense, it was out of this world that they were able to do moving up and down the floor, up and down the field. Overall, 445 total yards, 6.4 yards per play. They can get better on third down. They were just 4-12, and they turned it over on downs twice. Here's the thing, though. In the red zone, you were 2-for-5, so you weren't efficient in the red zone. Two boneheaded turnovers by Philip Rivers were awful, and that's the big difference. Both things can be true. Philip Rivers can still be awful, especially in those two turnovers, and the Colts offense can still be efficient. So ultimately, though, when I look at what the Vikings did against the Green Bay Packers, this is my worry. And what do we mention multiple times, not only going into the matchup with Green Bay, but for the Vikings and ultimately why I chose the Green Bay Packers. In a offseason where you get no preseason action and you lose essentially 8-9 guys on your defense to free agency, Daniel Hunter in terms of injury and couldn't play in week one, it is going to be tough to turn that around and find something functional as a defense, even though Mike Zimmer is a genius for the most part. And that turned into 522 total yards for the Packers, 6.9 yards per play, 6 of 11 on third down, and 31 first downs. Like, this defense was not good. And now we get a Colts offense that left a win on the field and that probably should have won the game ultimately, but did not because of all those red zone attempts. If I get under 3, I like the Indianapolis Colts. I think from an offensive standpoint, they should still be able to take advantage of what Minnesota brings to the table. We should also note, too, this game, the total sitting right now, 48.5. Don't think it would surprise most to realize that this has been bet up from about 47 to 48.5 where it stands right now. All right. When we come back, it's the end of the week here, of course, or near the end of the week. But Thursdays mean that we check in with the guys from Gone Racing. We'll find out because it's a big weekend. There's a couple people are going home, man. We're going to the round of 12. Somebody's got to win a race because there are some guys who are sitting in the red like, oh, boy, do I need a win. Jeff Motley will walk us through that next. All right, week 2 of the NFL, just a few hours away, and they're bringing us the Battle of Ohio with Cleveland facing Cincinnati. BetRivers Sportsbook boosted the odds on Burrow to throw a touchdown. Get even money with maximum $25 bet on a touchdown thrown by Cincinnati's number one overall pick. BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook with fast payout approvals and superb customer service. Got to be 21, playable in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. If you have a gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER. Indiana, 1-800-9 with it. Colorado, 1-800-522-4700. Playable in New Jersey as Play Sugar House. All right, we are getting down to the nitty and the gritty over in NASCAR. One more race, and then we get to the round of 12, which makes this weekend at Bristol very important. And who better to break it all down than Jeff Motley, who's going to join us here right now. Host of Gone Racing, of course, here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. What's up, man?
It's great to be here. It's pretty exciting seeing this is the last race of the first round of the playoffs. And, yeah, there's four guys that are going to be going home after Saturday night at Bristol.
Yep, and there's four guys, too, who are up against it really and need a win. Two guys, really. Matt DiBenedetto and Ryan Blaney.
Ryan Blaney shocks me. You know, I really thought Ryan Blaney was one of those dark horse guys that could really be in the mix, and he has really been terrible. And it all started with him getting a penalty for going through technical inspection and having too much weight in the car, and his crew chief getting thrown out in the first race of the playoffs at Darlington. So it's been a horrible start to the playoffs for Blaney. DiBenedetto was on the outside looking in, coming in. But I'll tell you, we're going to Bristol where Matt DiBenedetto, in very inferior equipment a year ago, should have won the race and ended up finishing second. So he's the kind of guy who could probably hit a walk-off or throw a Hail Mary, whatever you want to call it, this weekend at Bristol.
Right, and refresh for folks who are kind of new to the whole thing, because a win will get you in, regardless of points for them. If they win, they will move on to
correct.
The
if you are one of the 16 drivers that are in the playoffs and you win this week at Bristol, that will automatically get you into the next round of the playoffs, which will start right here where we are in Las Vegas.
Yep. So three guys have already moved on: Kevin Harvick, Brad Keselowski, who won this past weekend, and then Denny Hamlin with enough points to move on. Guys that I would think is safe: Joey Logano, pretty safe at this point.
Joey Logano looks pretty safe. Martin Truex Jr. looks safe, and Austin Dillon for the most part are safe. I mean, yes, something crazy could happen. Chase Elliott's probably in pretty good shape because it would take a lot of guys to have trouble for those guys to get knocked out.
Yeah, my boy Eric Almirola is still kind of sitting on on the cut line right now.
He is. You know, Eric Almirola, Clint Bowyer, and Kurt Busch are all really kind of sitting right on that bottom line there, and all of them are in right now. But, man, it would be incredibly disappointing, I think, for Eric Almirola if they were to get knocked out in the first round, given how strong they were in the middle part of the season.
Yeah, I mean, constantly finishing in the top 10, kind of the bridesmaid, never the bride, though, never really finishing and getting ultimately to the top. So let's talk about this coming weekend. Bristol, another short track. So walk us through this short track and what it means here for Bristol, because every track is unique. It's not just about the length.
It is. Bristol, you know, there used to be a joke. I think it was Dick Trickle said it was like flying a jet plane in a gymnasium. And Jeremy Mayfield had the line. He said it was kind of like a dryer. You go round and round and somebody loses a sock when it's all over. And I always kind of thought those were a couple of pretty good analogies. But Bristol is a half-mile track, but it's high banked like Daytona and Talladega. You're running 15-second laps around the track, and it's a 500-lap race. It's a track where Denny Hamlin has been strong on lately. We've had two races there this year. Brad Keselowski won the first regular race there that was a 500-lapper, and then Chase Elliott won the All-Star race there. The All-Star race actually got moved from Charlotte to Bristol because of COVID, and Chase Elliott won that. Now, I think right now, looking at some of the odds, I think the odds makers are putting a little too much into Chase Elliott winning that All-Star race.
Okay.
You know, keep in mind, that was a 125-lap race, and he won a 15-lap sprint.
Right.
This is a 500-lap race. There's no 15-lap sprints. And honest to goodness, when you have a restart and you're starting up front, you're probably going to be able to jump out front for 10, 12, 15 laps. But if your car's not good, you're not handling well, then within 20, 25 laps, you're going to start getting overtaken by other drivers. And that's why I'm not buying in quite as much on the Chase Elliott hype this weekend as some others. And Brendan, I think, feels the same way, my co-host on Gone Racing.
So to give you the odds, of course, if you're watching, Denny Hamlin plus 450 to win the whole thing, the favorite, Kyle Busch 575, Chase Elliott at 6-1, the odds that you were mentioning, Kevin Harvick at 6-1, Keselowski 6-1, Logano 9-1, and then you get into the double digits with guys like Ryan Blaney at 14-1, Busch at 16-1. You know, going back to really quickly, because you mentioned guys who can make some noise, it is weird because I've noticed, you know, Brendan brought him up last week. We opened up with Blaney. The odds reflect some respect for Blaney as well. So, like, there's this respect for Blaney. It's just the results haven't been there.
Exactly. And I think part of the respect for Blaney is we've kind of always said he is the opener. You know, it's like they call Kevin Harvick the closer. Well, you know, some of these baseball teams have got these guys that come out and pitch the first two innings and then they go to somebody else. Well, Blaney's been the opener. He's led races early. He's won stages early. And at the end of the race, he just doesn't seem to be there and he seemed to fade. But I think he gets a lot of respect because he's a teammate with Joey Logano and Brad Keselowski in very similar equipment. And he's got Todd Gordon for a crew chief, who was Joey Logano's crew chief when he won the championship 2 years ago. And I think all those things should add up to Ryan Blaney being a championship contender. And I can't imagine any team that's more disappointed than that team is right now to find themselves in the position they're in.
So I'm curious. I asked Brendan this, and I'll ask you this, but in a different fashion. So you look at some of the guys who are already locked in, like Kevin Harvick, Keselowski, Denny Hamlin. Hamlin obviously being the favorite to win this weekend. You know, as a better, from an emotional and just motivation standpoint, I get that points carry over, but to take 450 with Denny Hamlin, who's safely locked in, I feel like there's a natural sense to let down a little bit if you're a guy like Hamlin or somebody else locked into the round of 12.
But at the same time, he's got nothing to lose.
Right.
And look, number one, you're running for some money. You're also running for more bonus points going into the next two rounds of the playoffs. So there is something at stake. And look, I'm going to tell you, race car drivers, once they buckle that helmet on, they want to make sure they beat the next guy that's in front of them. And I don't think that there is a laid back or, oh, yeah, we got this. Now, don't get me wrong. I do think you can get into those last two or three races of the regular season, and you might say we're going to use this as a test session to get into some of these playoff tracks. But right now that you're in the playoffs, I don't think there's any holding back.
So as we talk about some of these racers that are up there, again, with Hamlin as your favorite, any middle-of-the-range shots? So we'll talk about, like, Harvick, Keselowski, Logano, Blaney, Kurt Busch. Those are all in the range of 6-1 to 19 to 16-1. Martin Truex Jr. will throw in there as well.
That's the one that gets me. Now, Martin Truex Jr. has been horrible at Bristol.
Yeah.
His average finish is about 20th, which is mind-blowing to me. But he's still Martin Truex Jr., and he's 16-1. And I like to point out, Kevin Harvick had never won at Pocono. He won at Pocono this year.
Mm-hmm.
Denny Hamlin had never won at Dover. He won at Dover this year. Martin Truex Jr. has not won at Bristol. Martin Truex Jr., I think, has got the capability of winning. Now, not sitting here going to predict him as the winner of the race, but I'm telling you, at 18 or 16-1, that's a pretty good number to take a chance on. And the other guy, and he's up there at the top, nobody has been better at Bristol than Kyle Busch.
Mm-hmm.
Has not won a race all year,
yep.
Is very hungry, and he is plus 600 on Kyle Busch at Bristol.
And in the cup standings too, he's ninth. Like, so it's not like he's safely in. He
absolutely
is. He's absolutely motivated to win this bad boy.
Absolutely. And I think Bristol is one he circles on his calendar every time he goes.
No, I know with actually both you and Brendan, it's been pretty consistent, relatively down on Kurt Busch since we've had you guys on the program. What about him coming into this weekend?
Well, Kurt likes Bristol. Yeah. He's had a lot of success at Bristol. Kurt, I just don't know if that Ganassi team has really put it together. You know, they were better when Kyle Larson was there and Matt Kenseth has replaced him, and it seems like it's kind of pulled the whole team down, and I kind of hate that because I really like Matt a lot. But the Ganassi team just has not been quite as strong, and I think Kurt's sort of feeling the effects of that.
So we mentioned Kyle Busch. Any of the other drivers that stuck out to you in terms of the odds?
You know, I think the ones probably we mentioned are the ones that I like the best. I mean, Kyle Busch, to me, the fact you can get Kevin Harvick at plus 600 anywhere and Martin Truex Jr., I really like those three. And look, how do you not give a little bit of a nod to Austin Dillon? Austin Dillon finished fourth last week at Richmond. He finished second the weekend before at Darlington. That came out of nowhere. And this is after he won at Texas earlier this year just to get into the playoffs. And Brendan and I like to talk about momentum. Nobody's got more momentum, try saying that really
fast,
than Austin Dillon does. And I think Austin Dillon is a guy that, you know, maybe you look at him as a top three guy. I mean, I don't know if I'm ready to pick him to win, but, I mean, like, we've got top three odds that Brennan and I talk about, and he's a plus 450 for a top three, and I think he's got a great shot at that.
So it's funny. I had one of these circled that I wanted to mention to you. In some of the analysis, it sticks out to me even more. If we look at some of the props, at least in terms of matchups, Ryan Blaney is, like, minus 135 over Martin Truex Jr. here in their matchup. That seems like a relatively high price for Blaney.
Yeah, that seems like that's a price of a guy that's desperate against a guy that's been terrible here.
Yep.
You know, one head-to-head matchup, and we got this at the Westgate, and we may have different numbers here that Brendan and I jumped all over. Kevin Harvick was plus 120 against Chase Elliott's minus 140. And that one to me, I mean, how on earth do you leave Kevin Harvick at a plus 120 against Chase Elliott? I couldn't.
Well, you guys were right because the markets moved that to a pick right now. So,
well, maybe they were listening, even though our show hasn't even aired yet.
Ultimately, you know, you never know where these guys get some of their information from at this point. All right, again, so we're talking about what's coming up this weekend. This is the cutoff point. You move on to the round of 12. I asked Brendan yesterday, so I'll ask you big picture-wise, if we're looking at, like, the odds to win the whole thing. Has anything stuck out to you in terms of performances or looking at the tracks ahead, guys who do well on these tracks that you would take a shot on to win in a futures price now, not the specific race, but the whole cup?
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin, and maybe those two Penske cars of Keselowski and Logano. But if you want to try to take a flyer on somebody, mm-hmm. I mean, like right now, I think the odds are still 100-1 on Austin Dillon. At least that's what Brendan and I had for our show. 100-1 for Austin Dillon. Why not go drop $10 on him? Well, what do you have to lose?
Yeah. Some of the other numbers, too, we have, and this is via DraftKings, to win the Cup Series championship. Harvick is a favorite, plus 175. Denny Hamlin, plus 275. Keselowski 650, you get Truex at 7-1, Logano at 9-1. That's when you get into the double digits, like a Chase Elliott at 11, a Kyle Busch at 14-1 in that range as well, and then Austin Dillon actually at DraftKings has him at 25-1. So that's a pretty big market discrepancy there. If you can get that 100-1,
yeah, if you could, and that's those are just the odds that we had from the right. Westgate for our show mm-hmm. was 100-1. So.
All right, well, explain to people because of what you do and what's coming up next weekend, because here in Las Vegas, we're going to have a very busy weekend.
Well, I oversee all the PR promotions and everything at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and after Bristol's done, we will kick off the second round of the Cup Series playoffs with the South Point 400. We're sitting right here in the South Point right now. So looking forward to a big weekend next weekend at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and excited about Saturday night to watch these guys race under the lights in Bristol, too.
Is that Brendan's actual car? Is that why that's out there?
Well, he won't be racing in the South Point 400, but his car just sits there because I think it looks nice at the entrance.
Yeah, for those who are wondering, when I walked in today, Brendan's car just, bam, sitting right
and
there.
And it will sit there all through race week. Yep. That's because it's race week.
All right, Jeff, we appreciate it. Tell people when they can find, watch, and listen to Gone Racing.
Gone Racing will be on tonight for the first time, but we'll air on both the NASCAR channel and on VSiN about four times throughout the weekend, including right before the race on Saturday night.
I like it. Make sure you check it out. Or if you're a VSiN Plus subscriber, you can go watch it whenever you want on demand at VSiN.com. With that, we are all done. VSiN.com/podcast. If you missed out on any part of the show today, Humans was fantastic. Mo Egger for some last-minute analysis on Thursday Night Football. Betting Across America is next. We'll see you tomorrow for Football Friday.